And joining us on Perspectives today is Jan Jarboe-Russell. Jan is the author of the book, The Train to Crystal City. And it's an interesting book. It's actually about, it says on the news release, it says, The Train to Crystal City, FDR's Secret Prisoner Exchange Program, and America's Only Family Internment Camp During World War II. And again, it's Jan Jarboe-Russell. Jan is a former Nieman Fellow. She's a contributing editor for Texas Monthly and has written for the New York Times, the San Antonio Express News, New Slate, and other publications. She is also the author of Lady Bird, a biography of Mrs. Johnson, and has also compiled and edited They Live to Tell the Tale. She lives in San Antonio with her husband, Dr. Lewis F. Russell, Jr., and she is joining us now from San Antonio. Jan, thank you again for being with us.
Hello, El Paso. I'm so glad to talk to you all.
And as far as, first of all, before we get into the book, The Train to Crystal City, tell us a little bit about your background. I gave a little bit here during the introduction, but I'm sure there's a lot more to tell.
Well, I have spent a great deal of my time at Texas Monthly. In fact, one of my favorite stories was years ago in the 90s, I did a story about Cathedral High School.
Oh, okay.
In El Paso and the great swim team there. And I spent a lot of time in El Paso for that story, and it's one of my favorites. I love El Paso, and I love Texas Monthly and great Texas stories. And so, you know, I did the cover of Ann Richards on the motorcycle. A lot of people remember the White Hot Mama cover. And in that piece, I attempted to nominate Ann Richards for president of the United States, and I'm sort of sorry it didn't work out that way.
Well, she was an incredible lady, and another incredible lady that, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, is you wrote a book about, and that is the former First Lady, second First Lady from Texas, and that is Mrs. Johnson, Lady Bird Johnson.
Yes. Yes, I interviewed Mrs. Johnson on her 85th birthday for a cover story for Texas Monthly. I found her so interesting that I launched into a biography, which actually will be released in January as a paperback from Scribner's. And in it, it's more a biography of their marriage. Essentially, I tackle the issue of how Lady Bird lived with Lyndon Baines Johnson, and she comes across in the book as a much stronger and person than I think anyone ever knew.
I think you took the words right out of my mouth, because that was going to be my next question. How in the world did this lady, put up with the antics of LBJ? LBJ was a good man, good teacher, very good politician, knew how to play the game, but also he had his moments. And as you mm-hmm. mentioned, I guess Lady Bird's the only one who could kind of reel him in.
Right. You know, Lady Bird lost her mother at the age of 5, and so she was essentially a motherless daughter. And her father, Captain Taylor, from East Texas, was the richest man in the county. So she was very, very wealthy, and she was raised by her father. And all her life, Lady Bird gravitated to men of power. And I think one reason that one of the surprising things that I learned is that Lady Bird is responsible for the Johnson family's fortune. She's the one who started the media empire. She bought every home they had. She bought the ranch. And so Lyndon Johnson depended upon her. And the truth of the matter is, as Lady Bird herself told me, that while they did have their differences, as we all know, Johnson had numerous affairs, and Lady Bird had to deal with the sorrow of that. But in the end, she decided that they were better together than apart, and she decided that they could both do something for their country. So she was a much stronger, more independent woman than her public personality seemed to suggest.
We're visiting with Jan Jarboe-Russell. She is the author of the book, The Train to Crystal City, FDR's Secret Prisoner Exchange Program, and America's Only Family Internment Camp during World War II. When I mentioned that, and then when you and I were talking before the interview, we both kind of said that we weren't aware of this, and I kind of just stumbled across it because one of my colleagues, Dr. Richard Pineda, told me about the book. And you kind of stumbled across it, too, and then you went ahead and did investigative journalism about this. And I guess what you uncovered is just incredible.
It's just incredible. It is shocking beyond belief. Crystal City, Texas, is located 120 miles from my home in San Antonio, where I'm sitting today. And over from 1942 to 1948, trains with windows shards pulled down carried civilians, Japanese and Japanese Americans, German and German Americans, Italians and Italian Americans, and many others from Latin America. They carried these trains, carried these people across the miles of empty plains to this small desert town. And over the course of the war, more than 6,000 civilians were there. The reason I call it America's only family internment camp is the history we know about FDR's internment policies revolves around the arrest of 120,000 Japanese and Japanese Americans on the West Coast who were sent to 10 relocation camps after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Many of these camps had families in it, and they also had single people in it. But the camp in Crystal City was the only camp started in 1942 specifically to reunite enemy alien fathers, German, Japanese, and Italian, with their children and wives in this family camp. So only families were there, and only families of multiple nationalities.
As you mentioned, we're visiting with Jan Jarboe Russell, and we're discussing her book, The Train to Crystal City. You mentioned it, Jan, in the book that, first of all, Crystal City is only 35 miles from the Mexican border, and people
yes.
are going, what? What? It's amazing. So when you found out about this and you took upon your journey to do some interviews and, of course, get all the material for this book, where did you start? And first of all, give us your reaction to this when you were first told by, I think it was a professor or a colleague?
Right. Well, I am 64 years old today. Not today, but that's my age at this moment. But more than 40 years ago, when I was 19, I was a journalism student at the University of Texas. And I met the dean of architecture, who was a Japanese-American named Alan Taniguchi. And I did an interview with him. And in the course of the interview, I asked Alan, how did you get to Texas? And he said, well, my family was in camp here. And at that time, as a young woman, the only camp I knew was a church camp. So I said, church camp? And Alan looked at me and laughed, and he said, not exactly. And then he explained to me that he and his family had been interned in Crystal City. And while I was still a student at the UT, I was fortunate enough to meet his parents and his brother and to get to know him. And I knew a little bit about the camp. But the truth of the matter is the children in the camp, such as Alan and his brother and all the others that I ended up interviewing, they really had no idea what they were doing in that camp because they were children. They had no context for why they had been taken from their homes, mainly on the East and West Coast, and brought to this location, which was as close to Siberia as we have in the United States. They did not know. Time passed, and when I learned that Alan Taniguchi had died when I learned this fact in 2010, I felt very badly that I never followed through with what was the Crystal City internment camp. I went to his office in Austin, and his son gave me a list of Alan's friends that were in the camp. And that night, I started calling these people, most of them in their 80s, not some in their 90s, a few in their 70s who were born in the camp, and German-American kids and Japanese-American kids, And then I started interviewing them, and that's how the research began.
We are visiting with Jan Jarboe Russell. Jan is a journalist, and she contributes regularly to Texas Monthly, but she's also written a couple of books, one that's going to be released soon again. It's in paperback. It's about Mrs. Johnson, Lady Bird Johnson. But the one we're discussing right now is The Train to Crystal City, FDR's Secret Prisoner Exchange Program, and America's Only Family Internment Camp During World War II. Jan, when we talk about internment camps, a lot of people are familiar as to what went on, on the West Coast, and especially up in the Pacific area. However, as you mentioned that you talked to this dean, the fact that people thought that all the camps held Japanese Americans, Crystal City was very different. And in fact, I was surprised, especially when you said there was a large contingent from Peru.
A large contingent from Peru, and they were both Japanese, Peruvians, and German Peruvians. And here's how crazy the situation was. FDR was worried about the Panama Canal, and he was worried about people slipping in to the United States, either German or Japanese saboteurs. So early, even before we were in the war, in 1938, he asked J. Edgar Hoover to make deals with 13 different Latin American countries so that he could get German and Japanese people into the United States so that they could be used as potential, could be traded for POWs behind enemy lines in Germany and in Japan. That was essentially the purpose of the Crystal City camp. And so what happened is that the FBI went to Peru and to Colombia and to many other countries, and they started searching for these Axis nationals. And what happened is they targeted the wealthiest people there. And so what happened is that the government then, when the people were arrested, the government then seized the property of those people. So you had people making, Japanese people making sake, and they had huge fortunes. And so the FBI would arrest them. They would be put on army boats. They would be taken to the port of New Orleans, where they were doused. They were all sprayed in case they might have lice, and their passports were taken away from them, and they were then arrested as illegal immigrants in the United States. They were then taken to Crystal City and interned behind and joined the groups that were there. And so in Crystal City, as hard as it is to imagine, you had English being spoken by the American-born kids, and then you had German being spoken, you had Japanese being spoken, and then you had several thousand people there who spoke only Spanish and who had never been to Germany and to Japan. There were, in the course of the war, four large prisoner exchanges from Crystal City. The first two, in June of 1942 and then in September of 1943, involved the Japanese. And so the fathers, mothers, and their American-born children, or in some cases, the Latin American-born children, were put on trains again, taken to the port of New York, and sent to Tokyo, where they were traded into war for POWs and for businessmen, that American businessmen in Japan. The second two trades were in 43 and 40, and January 2nd, 1945, that involved the Germans. And my book pretty much tells the story from the primary point of view of two American teenage boys, girls, only girls. I chose girls. And I did that because, as you know, women tend to live longer than men. And so the girls that I chose were in their 80s, and one of them was named Ingrid Iserol, born in Strongsville, Ohio, near Cleveland. And her father, Matthias, was an engineer and born in Germany. And so I follow her story from the moment her father is arrested all through their years in the Crystal City internment camp, and then them being traded into Germany and the terrible situation they found in war-devastated Germany. And then she finally, as a grown woman, made it back to the U.S. The same thing happened with the Japanese-American girl, Sumi Uchigawa, who was born in Los Angeles, and her father was a photographer in Los Angeles, and they were almost traded in the 1943 trade from Crystal City, but in fact they were traded later in the war into Japan. So it's, to tell you the truth, at each stage of the process, I found the facts absolutely mind-boggling that this occurred, and that it occurred right in my own backyard.
We're visiting with Jan Jarboe Russell. Jan is the author of the book, The Train to Crystal City, FDR's Secret Prisoner Exchange Program and America's Only Family Internment Camp During World War II. Jan, you mentioned earlier about the fact that they might as well have been in Siberia. That's how it felt to them. And in your book, you also discuss, it's an interesting and it's very pertaining to especially the families, because it's their staple, and that's about their diets, and especially the Japanese when it came to tofu. Tell us that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting story.
You know, I have to say my book is very nuanced, because the truth of the matter is that the Crystal City internment camp was run as humanely as any internment camp could be run. No one went hungry in Crystal City. They had three schools, an American school, a German school, and a Japanese school. They did lose their freedom completely. They had to show up for roll call and things like that. There were six guard towers around the 290-acre barbed wire fence, and there were armed guards and Border Patrol agents on duty all the time. The penalty for escape in was death, and in the course of the long history of the camp, no one ever tried to escape. So it was humanely run, and an example is the one that you mentioned. The Japanese people did not, you know, everybody worked at the camp. They grew their own vegetables. They did get some rationing from the government. They made their own ice. They made their own mattresses. The camp functioned as a small town, with the internees being the workers. But the officer in charge of the camp, Joseph O'Rourke, was very concerned about the American-born children who were being raised in this camp, and how they would feel about the fact that their government had obviously betrayed them by the fact that they had been born to nationals. And so the Japanese really missed, the Japanese liked Japanese food. They did not like American food. And so a contingent goes to Joseph O'Rourke and say, we want to build a tofu factory because we need tofu. Well, that was a difficult challenge, because tofu requires ocean water, and it requires a whole bunch of ingredients that we don't have down in South Texas. But O'Rourke worked with them, and they did come up with a way to be able to make tofu. And they established the tofu factory in a victory hut. And then the moment that the tofu factory went online, all of the Japanese people in the camp were very, very happy to be able to have their tofu. Then, of course, what happened is that the German leaders in the camp came and said, well, the Japanese have had to have their tofu. We would like a beer garden so that we could have our culture. And so O'Rourke allowed them to build this shaded kind of patio. And once a week, he allowed them to make beer. And they had a small beer garden there in Crystal City. Now, clearly, that must have been the first tofu factory ever established in Texas. But as for the beer gardens, I think we had all of those. we had enough of those already. But that's just a small indication of the way daily life in the camp was. It may surprise your listeners, as it surprised me, that when I interviewed the children of the camp, who are now as very old, it's hard to imagine this, but some of their fondest memories are in Crystal City because even though they had lost their freedom, they were with their families. They were with their families, and they, and in close proximity. And the friends that they made in school, the Japanese making friends with the Japanese kids in schools, Japanese and Germans, etc., they remained their friends for life. So while it's a bitter and sweet story of American survival, of resilience, of how one endures suffering with as much grace as possible, so ultimately, I consider my book a warning about the effects of fear and hysteria during times of war and how people can be easily scapegoated based on their ethnicity. And on the other hand, it's a surprisingly hopeful book because most of the people that I interviewed did make it back to America. Many of them joined the military, and they have been completely assimilated into our lives.
We're visiting with Jan Jarboe-Russell. Jan is the author of the book, The Train to Crystal City, and it's about FDR's secret prisoner exchange program and America's only family internment camp during World War II. Jan, besides, and as you mentioned, the fears and other things that come with war, despite the fact that the war had broken out and we had these internment camps in California, there was still, and I guess it's been around forever, even before we became a nation, is the anti-immigrant sentiment across the country.
Yes, it's very, I was surprised to really research this, but according to the Enemy Alien Act of 1745, if you are a citizen, or if you were born and you are a citizen of a country that we in the United States are at war with, the government can take you and put you in prison, no charges. None of the enemy alien fathers in Crystal City were ever charged with a single crime. None of them had terms of their internment, so they didn't know if they were going to be interned for 2 weeks or 20 years. None of them had any access to due process. And when they attempted to fight their internment, the attorney general said, you know, it's not personal to us. It's not that you had to do anything wrong. You are a blood citizen of Germany, of Japan, of Italy. We can take you. We don't have to tell you why. That book is still on the records. So the people that are in Guantanamo Bay and the Arabs that are in Guantanamo Bay are arrested under the same terms. The government doesn't have to tell, they don't have to build a case against them. And so that is the way it is. That is the way it is. And so this is something for us to consider. In my book, I do not take like a strong political position. Roosevelt's internment policies were much more extensive than we understood. A recent reviewer of my work said that up until the time he read my book, he thought of Roosevelt as congenially progressive. But when it came to the internment policy, he now thinks of him as congenially ruthless. And I think that is the way it is with all presidents in war. And each reader will have to be able, can make their own decision about how they feel about this matter.
We're visiting with Jan Jarboe-Russell, and she is the author of the book, The Train to Crystal City. One of the things that you discussed there about the fact that, they were being held prisoner, if you want to say that word. However, there was also a problem after the war because some of these people were afraid to go back to their home countries because of what may have happened after the war.
Yes, that getting home was difficult for the children, for the American-born children of the people who were traded. It was a question of earning enough money in Japan and Germany. Many of them went to work for the American occupying forces in Germany and in Japan, including my two main characters. So they essentially, what they had to do is they had to make the choice to leave their parents and their siblings behind in Japan and Germany and to come back to the United States alone and make their lives there. But then some of the parents, when they wanted to be reunited with their kids in the 50s and even into the 60s, had difficulty getting permission to come to the United States.
We are visiting with Jan Jarboe-Russell. Jan is the author of the book, The Train to Crystal City, and it details the internment camp, family internment camp in Crystal City, Texas, which is 25 miles from a Mexican border. Jan, we've all read books in the past, like 1984, talking about Big Brother, 2001, A Space Odyssey, which is kind of like, wait a minute, we're already in 2015. But in 1935, Sinclair Lewis, well known for writing The Jungle, wrote a book similar to about, you know, America with a lot of concentration camps. I think it was called It Can't Happen Here. And 6 years later, it did happen. And in another book that details internment camps with the Japanese, that's by Richard Reeves, it's called Infamy. He talks a lot about the anti-Japanese movement in the United States. And even Dr. Seuss made a cartoon before he became Dr. Seuss about how to, you know, look for a Japanese and distinguish them between other Asians, etc. And but as you mentioned, everything, you know, turned out well in the end. And we do have a lot of dark chapters in our history. But of course, we move on. And in your book, you tell us a little bit about what happened here in Texas. Now, as we wrap up now, Jan, can you give us perhaps a website or somewhere else where people can go to find out more about the Crystal City?
Sure. It's JanJarboe-Russell.com is my website. And I have a public Facebook page, Jan Jarboe-Russell, and then it's dash author page. And if any university in El Paso wants me to come and give a speech, I'm really trying to get this story out as much as possible. Because what you just said about Richard Reeves' book is also true of mine. You know, the good thing is the Japanese and the Japanese Americans received an apology from our government, and each person who was interned received $20,000. And this was under Ronald Reagan. To date, no one has even acknowledged much less apologized for the internment of German and German Americans. And there are all sorts of reasons for that. But I think that's a missed opportunity for our country.
Jan, thank you very much for visiting with us. We've been visiting with Jan Jarboe-Russell, author of The Train to Crystal City. If you want to find out more, you can go to JanJarboe-Russell.com, and that's Jarboe, J-A-R-B-O-E.